We have a special guest this morning here in hour number two.
Kevin Briniger from the State Chamber of Commerce is
the
with us.
The president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce is our good friend Kevin Briniger. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. For me, it was snow skis yesterday and water skis today.
Well, it sounds like you've got you have options. That's the good news.
That's true.
How much snow did you guys get in Indianapolis on Easter?
Well, I live in Noblesville, north of Indianapolis.
Well, close enough, right?
We got good 4 inches.
Wow!
It was heavy, wet snow.
Snowball fight snow.
It stayed on the ground overnight and into the day, and then as it warmed up yesterday, it disappeared. And now I'm looking out the window, and it is raining in sheets so hard I can hardly see the building across the street.
You know what that means, don't you? We're in Indiana. If you get snow and thunderstorms within 48 hours, we know where we are, in case you're lost on it. We thank you for joining us. We thought this would be a legislative wrap-up. Hey, what did we get accomplished? Hey, what's done? Hey, what's on the books? But this is just a halftime show now. Now we're talking about first half stats and maybe between the third and fourth quarter of what did or didn't get finished. First of all, just give us your take on the legislative session, how it ended, why it didn't end, and where we're going next month.
Well, there were some important and valuable things accomplished, but overall, this was not one for the record books, I think is what I titled my legislative wrap-up article. But what was particularly disappointing was that there were six bills at the end of session for which there had been conference committee reports agreed to between the House and Senate. They were ready to be voted on, but those agreements occurred so late in the process and so late on the last day that there wasn't time to get the reports written up and down to the floors of the House and the Senate to be voted on. And they just they ran the clock too long and ran out of time. And several of those bills were very, very important, and ones that we think were worthy of calling hopefully just a one-day special session, and we urged the governor to do that. One of them was funding for some school safety initiatives to try to shore up our schools, to make them safer places so that we don't have incidents like happened in Florida and Columbine and Sandy Hook and other places. And then another one was to couple our definition of adjusted gross income for individual and business tax purposes to the new, greatly revised federal code so that the Hoosier taxpayers and businesses don't have to literally calculate their state tax and federal tax returns twice or differently from one another.
Now, let me ask you a question. If these are such, quote-unquote, important issues, why are they left to the last minute? Was there just a glut of other bills that needed to move in front of them? Help me understand the procedural behind this and why they were left to the last minute.
Well, let's put the tax revenue update bill aside for a moment because it has a separate reason. The others, these are all good people, but they have their own ideas as to how laws should read. And there were legitimate differences between the Senate and the House. And on the other five bills, they just negotiated too long, sort of didn't compromise soon enough to get the bills written and the conference committee reports written and the bills down to the floor to be voted on. With regard to the tax bill, there were massive changes at the federal level, as we know. And there was analysis going on all during the session by Ernst & Young and by our Office of Management and Budget trying to determine what's the impact on Indiana if we do nothing but adopt those changes as the starting point for our tax return calculations. And that information was not finished and available to the Ways and Means Committee and the Senate Tax Committee until about 2 weeks ago in the session. And then they had to pour through all of that and try to figure out what provisions that they wanted to adopt. Were there any that they wanted to choose to do differently? And so they were under a real time crunch simply because of the enormity of the changes that were made by Congress in December to the federal tax code and the fact that it took time to sort all that out. So that bill was,
well, that at least makes sense.
That one was excusable, but the others arguably were not.
Well, do you feel that the others that were not were? I don't want to. Let me. How can I put this? Do you think everybody knew because they had the supermajority and everything else? Everybody wanted, quote, a piece of their pie, and were trying to figure that in at the last minute because they knew it could get passed, or is this just something that slipped through the cracks, and we should believe that?
Well, none of these were spending bills except the funding for school safety. So it wasn't like they were trying to get a, you know, a project for their district in a budget bill, because this was a non-budget year. But I think there were, and these were significant public policy issues. Things like, you know, to what extent are you going to regulate autonomous vehicles being tested on our roadways? It was one of the bills that died. And there were genuine differences in what the policy should be between the House and the Senate. And they just, the negotiators held out too long and didn't reach compromises and thought, you know, all this, you know, we can get this done. And, you know, that shouldn't happen when there's one party controlling both the House and the Senate and the governor's office. And it hasn't happened for the last 10 years when the Republicans have controlled all three places. But this year it did. And they just, nobody blinked fast enough, soon enough, and they ran out of time.
Kevin, with respect to the two major things you're talking about, what's to prevent somebody from trying to slip something else in this special session? Can they keep that from happening?
Yeah, they can, and I believe they will. Leadership in the House and the Senate will specify. I mean, the governor will lay out an agenda of what he wants them to accomplish in the special session. But once they convene, then he doesn't really have any control or authority over that. But it is the legislative leaders, and they've already stated publicly that they will limit the agenda to the bills that were pending at the very end, and they're not going to add new provisions, and they'll reach an agreement and understanding about that before the special session even starts. And having said so publicly puts pressure not only on them, but the members of the body, the members of their caucus, to stick to that agreement.
Realistically, Kevin, can they do this in one day?
Absolutely. They had the bills finished. They were ready to be voted on. They'll have to file them as new bills because this is a new session of the General Assembly, but they can file those exact bills or slight variations of them and then move them through the process, suspend the rules that talk about having to lay over on different days and be in and out in one day. And that's, and from our view, that's what they should.
Kevin, in way back time, I did a lot of reporting on what went on in the legislature, and I remember when they used to stop the clock before midnight so that they could go on for another day. How come they didn't do that this time?
Oh, that's not daylight savings time?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the original version of daylight savings time. I think partly because of the there's a lot more media scrutiny now, and their sessions are broadcast on the internet. And when that used to happen, the public really didn't know about it till after the fact.
Right.
You know, it was over and they'd adjourned and gone home, and it's like, okay, no big deal. But now, you know, the House and Senate sessions are broadcast on the internet. People know instantaneously if they go past midnight. And I think with one-party control of the House, Senate, and Governor's office, they didn't like the optics of doing that and appearing to be heavy-handed. And so they decided to kind of stick by the rules and have overtime instead.
Now, are they going to have a bake sale to cover this or a car wash? How are we going to cover this extra cash that's laying around?
Well, it's interesting. One of the bills that died had to do with essentially taking over the Muncie and Gary School Corporation because they are a financial disaster. And in fact, in Muncie, they passed a referendum that was supposed to be for capital projects and instead spent the money on operating and are still in the hole. And I read a piece yesterday out of Ball State University economist who said, you know, the media is making a big deal about a special session costing $30,000 a day to put on. And, you know, should the legislators get paid for working overtime when they didn't get their work done on time in the first place? And then he went on to say that the Muncie School Corporation had been overspending their means and deficit spending $30,000 a day for almost two straight years. So, you know, let's keep this all in perspective.
Kevin, I'm on the local MCCSE school board. And what are they going to do for safety of schools, given the number of schools, the number of situations, all of the other stuff that's going on? How can they expect anything is going to provide for safety in the schools?
Well, that's a good question. I saw the piece yesterday that said that the money that was being proposed was something like $2,600 per school if you spread it out.
Right.
I think realistically, you know, we're talking about planning and procedures and things of that. It's hard to believe there'll be much money available for like, capital expenditures to, you know, well, be able to lock down an entire school with the push of a single button or or anything like that, unless there's some major money at the federal level. But I think realistically, to your point, that sort of thing is going to have to be decided and implemented and probably funded at the local level. And we have a little paper here in Noblesville where I live where there was a parent group coming forward saying and had a vendor presenting that sort of, you know, total lockdown, the push of a button type solution. And with a number of elements to it, and parent groups coming in saying, we want it, and, you know, we'll raise the money to pay for it. And so, but that's going to clearly vary by community, based on, you know, what you think the level of risk is and what the appetite is for paying for these kinds of systems.
Let me ask you another question, Kevin. On the this legislature, a lot of the bills, we know the one that was signed immediately on the beer sales, but a lot of the legislation goes into effect in July, and that's when the attorneys get to work and find out, well, this I wasn't dotted and this T wasn't crossed and this doesn't really do what they thought it would do, all of that. Is anyone looking now and seeing that, hey, what this bill was purported to accomplish, it doesn't?
Yes, that happens each year after session, the dust settles, and particularly those bills that, you know, get amended late in the process.
Right.
And they have, the General Assembly has established a process, which I think is effective, and it's going to play into the special session, where they set aside a day after session, usually in May or June, and they call it Technical Corrections Day. And so if the Legislative Services Agency finds any mistakes or any of situations like you just described, and if they're significant enough, they can come back into session on a day that's already on everybody's calendar and do that correction. And while the governor hasn't specified the date of the special session yet, that technical corrections day is already set for May 15th, and that would appear to be the day that the governor is going to call them in on for a special session, and kind of for convenience purposes, because that day is already on and blocked off on the legislators' calendars.
Well, so dumb question. Why couldn't they do both of those things the same day then?
Oh, they will. They will.
I mean the special session and the technical corrections. Right.
That's exactly what they do. If they find any problems, technical problems, drafting problems with bills between now and then, they'll correct those on that day as well as finish the work that the bills that were ready to be voted on but didn't get voted on.
So they can claim that the $30,000 is really not an extra cost because it was going to be spent anyhow.
It was already scheduled.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a spin you're likely to see, quite frankly.
Well, that's why we have you on this program, to help us out with this. Kevin Brinegar is our guest. He's the president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. So sometimes column width doesn't give us everything we need to know.
Well, sometimes you need that insider's view.
Well, that's you. That's exactly right.
And that's what I'm here to help.
And when we see this session move forward, can anything be added to the agenda? If something happens in the next couple of weeks, can that be added to it? How set in stone is this in May?
It can be added. I mean, if, let's say, for example, you know, Amazon announces they're coming to central Indiana. But
you need a reaction right now on that.
Yeah, they need some piece of legislation for some part of the deal. Undoubtedly, that would be added to the agenda. But it would have to be something of that magnitude to rise to the level of importance to be added to the agenda when the legislators and the governor have already said that they want to limit this to just the bills that were pending at the end. And in fact, the governor has said he'll address the Muncie-Gary school situation administratively and isn't even asking for that legislation be pushed forward.
What happened on that, by the way? For a time, it was Ball State was going to take over the Muncie schools, and then they were a little cool toward that, and they are hot on it. You know, where is that on that? Is Ball State taking over the Muncie school system?
Probably not, but that's the way it was in the legislation.
Right.
That was ready to be voted on. After that legislation died, for reasons I haven't clearly sorted out, maybe because I haven't read up on it enough, they cooled and said, now we're not interested. And they got some negative pushback from the school corporation and members of the community. But clearly, the folks who have been running the school district have proven that they are absolutely not capable of doing so. The school district is in dire financial condition and needs help on that, needs leadership help. And, you know, Ball State runs a laboratory school, the Burr School. I think they operate as a charter school and have for decades and decades. And, you know, they have a school of education, and they teach administrators and were willing to step in, I think in part because the new president of Ball State has kind of taken a different view that, you know, we need to be part of the community. We want our faculty and staff living in the community and not feeling like they've got to commute from, you know, Pendleton or somewhere in Hamilton County to have, you know, good education and a good place to live. And we want to be part of the revitalization of the Muncie community. And they saw taking over the schools in this serious condition as one way to do that and sort of give back. But that feeling about taking over the schools seems to have cooled.
Kevin, one other thing. Some of the heavy hitters in the legislature have indicated that they're done. They're not going to be around. And you've got elections and things. Take a look at what the legislature is going to look like the next time around. What do you see?
Get that crystal ball out. Shine it up.
Well, you bring up an important point. And with the President Pro Tem David Long announcing in February that he was going to retire after the next election, basically serve the rest of, not serve the rest of his term because he had two more years, but serve until after the election when new leadership is determined. And it was argued that that was part of the problem and why there was this train wreck at the end of the session, because senators were busy jockeying for a position to be the new leader or to trade their vote for the new leader for a committee chairmanship or whatever, and that they were sort of took their eye off the ball, and because they weren't focused on the task at hand. And certainly that is going to happen, and that jockeying is continuing right now. So we're going to have a new leader at the Senate. Just in the last year, we've lost the appropriations chairman and the tax chairman in the Senate. On the House side, the number two and number three people in the House Majority Caucus are retiring. Bill Friend, the majority floor leader, and Kathy Richardson, who was my state representative from Noblesville, who's the caucus chairman. So you're going to have new leadership. There's going to be other people. There's some 20 legislators retiring.
Right.
And that's going to open up committee chairmanships and leadership spots. And so there's going to be a new regimes when we come back next January.
One other thing, the chamber always has a kind of a, I won't call it a wish list, but a what you would like to see
agenda,
the legislature, what you want to see them accomplish. How'd they do? Mm-hmm. What kind of a grade did you give them?
We gave them about a C. We were not particularly happy this session. We've had, and we have high expectations because we have a long-range economic development action plan called Indiana Vision 2025. We've had A-level sessions for a number of years, and that over the last 15 years, we've taken Indiana from the bottom half of the states in terms of business climate and lots of other rankings, and taking that to top 10 and number one in the Midwest by having big public policy accomplishments each and every year. We didn't do that this year, and we need to get back to that kind of an agenda and that level of accomplishment as we go into the 2019 session.
Does the election year affect
our message, over the summer?
Does the election year affect that happenings or not happenings?
Yeah, I think it does. There's less inclination to do big, bold things in an election year, although they've done those kinds of big, bold things, you know, in election years. They did major tax restructuring a few years ago. They passed Right to Work in 2012. That was a non-election year. But this year there wasn't the appetite. And I think a little bit of scratching the head and say, and we have to give them credit. They've done a lot of really big, important things that have moved Indiana forward. And, you know, you get to a point where what's left on my list is the question. And I think for us, one of the big things that's left on the list is public policy that will improve our healthcare metrics. We are an unhealthy state compared to other states. Our smoking rate is almost 50% more than the U.S. average. And that costs the state a lot of money, hundreds of millions of dollars in Medicaid spending versus if we were at the U.S. average. And it costs businesses an estimated $6 billion a year in absenteeism, lost productivity, and additional health care costs.
Kevin, one other thing from my point of view is that the state chamber and Amazon. Do you have any inside information, any inside track about how that's going and what could happen?
It's funny you asked it. I'm chuckling because I got a phone call from Indianapolis Star reporter yesterday evening essentially asking the same thing and asking about whether there was a site selection or scout team representing Amazon here a week or so ago. And I don't know that for a fact one way or another.
Don't they just fly their drones over?
Their drone, check the place out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But there were rumors that a couple weeks ago there was a site selection group from Amazon here. But that was one of the best-kept secrets around here that I've
ever
seen.
Why would that be surprising if Indianapolis is on the final cut? Shouldn't they be scouting around?
It wouldn't be surprising at all. What was surprising is that they could keep a lid on the fact that they were here for a couple of days.
Gotcha.
In fact, that's the case.
Well, it's the same thing. And you got people like Keith bugging you for questions about it. That's why they kept a lid on it. They just wanted to come
exactly.
in and do their business. Take a look, get out of here. Maybe that's a good thing. We didn't bother them. Maybe they'll be bothered in other places where they say, well, you know, Indianapolis people, they just let us go about our work.
Yeah. I'll say this about Amazon. You know, you can't say it's going to happen when you got 20-1 odds, but I will not be surprised at all if we make it into the, say, final five. Now, beyond that, it's anybody's guess, but I think we have one of the strongest cases in the United States, and I will be actually a little bit surprised if we don't make it in the final five or four or whatever they cut the list down to.
Kevin, is it a good move for Indiana even to give up the kinds of things you have to give up to get them?
Well, that'll be a key question, and the state will need to be prudent with what they offer and give up because this will be a bit of a bidding war. And we'll need to do what we always do, which is do good cost-benefit analysis and determine sort of what our number is that that makes sense for Indiana relative to the investment and plan, facility and jobs and economic growth that we'll get back in return, and then stick to that number. And if it boils down to, you know, somebody's offered you $1 billion more than we did, then, and we were willing and able to do, then you just say, well, okay, that is what it is. But beyond that, we'll certainly put our best foot forward.
Is the publicity
strong case?
Is the publicity in making the final cut, how good is that? Then you don't have to deal with, quote unquote, how you deal with the 50,000 people that move into your town and the goods and services and everything else. Is it great PR? It sounds like it, to be just included in that final four or five.
Yeah, it already has been, just to be in the
top,
in the
top 20 to 20. One shot, and we're already getting great PR out of this. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting great coverage from that. There was a New York Times article a few weeks back that really kind of spoke to that very point and said, you know, man, you need to take a closer look at Indianapolis and Indiana, because there's a lot there to offer that those of us who live on the East Coast or the West Coast, you know, don't think about. We think of those as flyover states, but it was a long article, and it peeled the onion back on all of the amenities and all the good reasons why Amazon should think about coming to Indianapolis.
Kevin, you can do all of the things you want to do. You can say all the things you want to say, but the Chamber is always talking about workforce, trained people, mm-hmm. people that have the ability to do the jobs that Amazon needs done. How are we in that regard?
Well, we passed a piece of legislation that we supported and we thought was very valuable, House Bill 1002. It does a variety of things, including increasing training grant funds. It also provides, through the Work One Center, some assistance to high school counselors to provide better career and college information to help students determine their careers and their what courses they're going to take in high schools. It also sets up a system not unlike when you take the SAT and decide what colleges you want your scores to be released to. This will allow students and parents at their option to decide if they want to have the college and career technical education courses that they've taken in high school released into a databank so that local employers can look at those and see what students have acquired what skills that they might need and want to use to hire those students once they finish high school. And that's not been available before because that information has all been considered confidential. And so there are some other good, important provisions in that bill. The other bill, Senate Bill 50, kind of it changes from one advisory committee to another and does a few things that are more, from our perspective, window dressing and didn't go far enough. And both the legislators and the governors have said, well, wait till 2019, and that's going to be, you know, the big year and the big focus on workforce. You know, we were told about a year ago that this would be the year, but we will continue to work with them, and we will continue to emphasize how critically important it is that we do everything we can to improve the skills of Hoosiers so they can reach their potential. And the Chamber has said that we need a parallel strategy of recruiting skilled people into our state because we have a bit of a population challenge. And we've got jobs, and there needs to be a whole advertising campaign and consideration of a individual relocation tax credit so that if you come here and fill a job that's empty that and stay here, you get a tax credit for doing so.
Excellent. You're right. You've got to salt the clouds a little bit if you don't have the people to do it, and you've got to train the next generation to come through. Kevin, great job as always. We're going to bother you again in May when this all finally eventually winds up, and we'll see what we've got moving on in that direction. Great job as always, my friend.
Thank you very much. Always great to talk to you, and I'll look forward to giving you a special session wrap-up sometime in mid-May.
Our special May edition, that's right. All right, great job as always, Kevin. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.